Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. I'm at your service for the next 2 hours, but my wife Renee is sitting here, and she's going to go garage sailing after 1 hour.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I might.
You might?
It's getting a little late. All the good stuff's gone.
Yeah, you need to come closer to your mouth, just like always.
Okay.
All right, now talk so we can set you up.
Hello, Mark. Good morning.
She's still low?
Yes, it sounds like she's on another mic.
Yeah.
All right, have you got this one set up or this one set up?
This one. Try this one. Folks, we're having a little technical difficulties that's unrelated to
Welcome
my
to
wife.
It's How's just, that?
Oh.
Perfect. Well,
that works good. Keep talking.
Oh, there we go.
Okay.
It's on the opposite side.
Well, I had you on mic 4 when you were really on
Salem,
mic 3.
Come on, get with the program.
Sorry.
We got 2 hours of this. We got to get ready.
We can't be fighting for 2 hours.
Oh, yeah, we can.
Yeah. We did all the way up here this morning. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You're more than welcome to join us. If you have a car question or a car problem, then give us a call. Car problems are something that, as you well know, dominates my life.
Yes, it does.
And we had a gentleman that called in the other day that he had an oil pressure light, or didn't call in, but sent me an email. Had an oil pressure light on. His wife stopped it, and she was traveling.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife stopped, and they said the oil was low, and so they added oil to it. Then it came on again, and she had somebody check it, and they said it was too high. So we got the red oil light on, and he says, you know, what should I do? And actually, he's looking for a reason to get rid of the car, I suspect.
Okay.
But, of course, his wife may have other plans.
Sure.
So I say to him, the thing that bothers me the most is when we have low oil pressure, the engine begins to clatter. It's an obvious clatter.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have that. So what we do is have a red oil light, but we don't have the symptom that goes along with low oil pressure. Then I said, If at 30 and 40 and 50 and 60 there's no light, but it's 70 and higher, then the oil pump screen that sucks the oil into the system could be plugged up. So the light comes on at 70 miles an hour because we have a restricted oil pressure problem, but doesn't come on at 60 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be pull the oil pan, replace the oil pump and the screen, the pickup assembly or the screen. So we talked about that. But I don't know. I think he understood. Well, I know he understood everything we said,
mm-hmm.
but I really do think that's nothing more than an oil pressure switch that's bad,
okay.
And I think that's. But from a customer's point of view, the customer wants you to take the oil pressure switcher out, put in a manual gauge, go drive it,
mm-hmm.
and see what the actual oil pressure is. Because if you're driving it and the oil pressure drops down below 10, then the light is correct. The light is saying, I got a problem.
Okay.
And then you check it hot, you check it cold, you check it 30, you check it at 80. You usually do the test drives at 80 for us.
Sure.
And up and down residential streets.
Uh-huh. How fast were we going this morning?
At that speed limit was 65, and I might have been over 3 or 4 miles an hour.
Yeah, 30 or 40.
Oh,
go ahead.
I was not. You're telling these people fibs. Fibs. But
those who know you know I'm not.
Okay. Okay. Well, those that don't know you, you don't tell the truth anyway. And they trust me. Okay.
Are you changing the subject now?
No, I'm going to do a brought to you by, this portion of one of the hoods brought to you by Automatic Transmission Exchange. Phil's been around since 1968. He's been around since automatic transmissions were first made. He knows the fundamentals on how it works. The difference between yesteryear and now is that yesteryear we used to shift the transmission based on your throttle and engine RPM and that's about it. Speed, I guess. So we would shift your transmission that way. Today we shift it based on electronics all the way. We're looking at a variety of things to know when to shift from first to second. But if you understand the fundamentals, then figuring out what's going on after that is a piece of cake. 40th Street in Washington, Automatic Transmission Exchange. If you drive up and down Washington, actually you're going to just go one way on Washington, but if you go up and down Washington, you'll see Automatic Transmission Exchange at 40th Street, and he's been there for a very, very long time. So we've had an exciting week at work. Nothing very special.
Nope.
And no complaints?
No, not that I've heard.
Okay. So you chime in on this story, okay?
Okay.
The end result is this. I'll tell the end before I tell the beginning. A gentleman takes his car into a repair shop, and he has a coolant leak.
Okay.
And they tell him, and he has extraordinary miles on this. They tell him that they think it's the head gaskets, and it's a diesel. They think it's a head gasket, and they say, if we take the heads off, we could be opening up a huge can of worms. The heads could lead to new heads or resurfacing or a valve job. And by the time we get done, we're going to be approaching the cost of a new engine.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than take a chance because of this coolant leak, we're just simply going to bid a new engine for $14,000. Okay? Now, I don't know the gentleman who brought the car in to us. I don't think he was a customer. I think he's a brand new guy. So he brings it in to us, and he says, would you check the coolant leak? The truck goes back to Adam, our senior diesel tech, mm-hmm. and he says the oil cooler's bad, and it's leaking. So they put in an oil cooler, and the problem is solved. I don't remember what it cost, but it was $300 or $400 or $500. That's to take the oil cooler off, get a new oil cooler, put it back on, bleed it, and clean up the mess that all that coolant left. So now the question becomes, what happened on the other $14,000 estimate? What was going on?
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's different kinds of oil, of auto repair facilities. You got the chain stores. So those are usually franchises, mm-hmm. and they're usually run by somebody who is a franchisee. You got those guys. Now, some of the franchises have decided that they don't make enough money on the transmission, so now they're going into all the other car repair stuff. And admittedly, we don't see the transmission problems today we saw in yesteryears. We've mm-hmm. been in business 39 years.
They're real odd problems, and you don't sometimes even realize they're a transmission issue or
yeah,
whatever.
You're right. Mm-hmm. But in reality, in the olden days, in the 70s and 80s and even the 90s, we would see transmissions at least once a week,
right.
a bad one.
Mm-hmm.
Today, we really might see 3 or 4 or 5 a year.
Yeah.
So it's not a real predominant problem. And, of course, you understand that. You understand, and I understand that if your market dries up, you either go out of business or you start doing something else.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got the franchise stores, and they're focused, the specialty shops, so to speak, tires, transmissions, glass, whatever. Then you've got the independent repair shop. Then you've got the chain store.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the dealers.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a wide variety of car repair places you can go to. So I don't know. Oh, I do. I know where he came from.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that this is what we did. This is not about me being a hero. This is about talking about what was going on the other end. It could have been a young technician that's never seen a General Motors oil cooler leak.
Right.
So he could have honestly misdiagnosed it because he was assigned the vehicle that he really shouldn't have been.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have the experience necessary to really accomplish this. He knew that if we had an internal engine problem, that it might turn ugly based on 200,000 or 300,000 miles, whatever the truck had on it. So he left that door open. Now, the service writer doesn't know crap from Shinola.
Most of them don't.
Service writers don't understand mechanical issues. They are nothing more than the conduit between the customer and the technician. They're supposed to facilitate that communication. So the young guy could have just not been experienced enough. He could have also recognized the mileage
mm-hmm.
and then created this story that said, because of all the things, it's kind of like operating on a dog that's 20 years old. Lots of things can go wrong. So go get a new dog.
Yeah.
So the rap comes from either the service writer or the technician. You're better off just to get a $1,400 engine. But that's still tied to his inability to diagnose it properly. Then you have the ugly part of it where, as we just spoke, transmissions are 3 and 4 and 5 a year now, where they used to be 3 and 4 and 5 a month. So we got technicians that are not, and most of them are on commission, so they're not really making the living they used to make. So there's that perpetuates the need to enhance the ticket to enhance my compensation.
Yep.
There's no two ways about that.
Yep.
We've had technicians we've hired that have done that didn't last long.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty easy to figure that out.
Yep.
But with the industry like it is today, with all these new cars that have 100,000-mile warranty on the motors, they have drivetrains that even go past that. You've got cars that need oil changes every 15,000 miles instead of 3,000 miles. We've got owner's manual. We used to do a lot of service at 30,000 miles.
Yep.
That's now 70. Some of those things don't even start looking in the owner's manual till 70, 80,000 miles.
Right.
So our industry's lost a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And then the more that we open, then that trims off everybody else's work. So if you're in a geographical area in a zip code all by yourself, you're fine. Mm-hmm. But if all of a sudden 10 guys move in, your business just got divided by 11.
Right.
So those are the kinds of things. And I'm not saying that everybody's abandoned. I'm not saying that. Mm-hmm. I'm saying there's a lot of other reasonable explanations, like the kid just didn't have the experience.
Sure.
Or the kid didn't know better and it was an honest mistake. Or it could have been some technician that decided to sell a $14,000 motor when he really knew that it was an oil cooler. We've had the same problems.
Yeah, I mean, that's happened to us before where we gave them a bid and then they come back and say, oh, you know, $400 fixed it or whatever, and we just flat missed it.
We did.
Yeah.
We did. And there's another reason when we flat missed it is they bring it in for symptoms.
Right.
Symptoms A, B, and C. Mm-hmm. When we charge them and give them the car, and then they come back and A, B, and C are still there.
Right.
That's happened to us.
Sure.
When that happens to us, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, because you always do,
mm-hmm.
we just give them their money back.
Yeah.
Just give them their money back and put
start
it back the way
or
we
whatever. Yeah.
If they give us a chance to start over, mm-hmm. some of them don't want to do
yeah.
that. That's okay with me. So when you look at the big picture, you see that, but what I'm really saying is what, here's my question to you.
Okay.
What percentage of our industry and all those ramifications, the franchises, the independent repair, the chains and the dealers, what percentage of all that is really bandits?
I don't know, maybe 10, 15.
And I would have said 20.
Okay.
I would have said, I'll go along with your 10
yeah.
to 20 if we can agree
okay,
on that.
Okay, yeah.
10 to 20% of the guys out there aren't playing by the rules.
Right.
And they're just simply buttering their own bread. The focus is on me, not you.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and we see magazines all the time, you know, how to upsell. We get calls all the time, how to upsell your customer, what to say, what to do. And it's just, it gets really frustrating to read that over and over and over again and know that people buy into it and they do that.
Yeah, we're going to take a break in a minute. But here's the deal.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. How many trade magazines after 39 years do I get a month?
A lot. I don't know.
I read all of them cover to cover.
Yeah.
And then what I do is I dog ear the pages and put a little tab on there and put it on the lunchroom table in some technical, this is what happened and it took us forever to diagnose it.
Right.
So I'm putting that on the lunch table for all the guys.
Right.
But in those magazines, every single version has some expert. One of the guys' name is Chubby. So Chubby tells everybody that if you're not making this much money and if your tickets aren't this high, then you need to do this and you need to sell this and call it a maintenance inspection and do all this other kind of stuff and this will bring up your bottom line and make you millionaires.
Mm-hmm.
And if you hire me, I'll come in and give you a private analysis of your process and then you'll make more money.
Yeah.
So yes, the answer is we have all kinds of experts. Now here's the problem with the experts. They all at one time had a shop. They show it in their resume.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in this business 20 years. Now they're working as a consultant. I suggest to you that you can make more money working on cars than you can be a consultant.
Yeah.
And I'm suggesting, my question to them is how come you aren't in the business?
Right.
If you know how to make gold out of oil, mm-hmm. then why aren't you in the business?
Yeah.
And how are you telling me how to run my shop when I look into your history and find out you couldn't even run your own? Okay?
Yep.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We got a couple of callers, but folks, we don't talk during the break because that's called doing the show before the show.
Yeah, but so. I did want to get back to one thing on when you were talking about that large estimate that guy got. It's always good. I would say $1,000 or even $500, whatever you're comfortable with, to get a second opinion from somebody because you're spending a lot of money and you want to make sure that that's going to fix what your problem is.
Okay, and the alternative is this. The alternative is to look him in the eye and say, my symptoms are going to be gone, guaranteed. You're going to be under your estimate by at least a dollar, and your estimate's an out-the-door price. Mm-hmm. I want all my old parts back.
Yeah.
And then go get the other estimate. Because nail them down.
Mm-hmm.
Nail them down. This is the estimate. This is the diagnosis. All that kind of stuff. Just nail the shop down.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, there isn't.
Okay. Yeah. Harker's Automotive is a good place. 38th Avenue and Indian School. Bob and Ellen run Larry Harker's Auto. Been around a long time. Bob's been one of the best diagnosticians I've ever met in my life. He is a gray-haired guy. He has more experience than any two young shop owners that I know of, any three shop owners that I know of. And I respect the young guys.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good guys out there. So, but if you're anywhere near 38th Avenue and Indian School and you don't have a shop, then may I suggest you try Harker's. If you have a car that nobody else can fix and you live in that area, then you need to take it by and talk to Bob. Let's go to the phones. Bob? Bob to Bob. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. Hi, Renee.
Hi.
So, Monday, I'm taking my wife's 2015 Equinox in for 100,000-mile service, and the owner's manual says I should have the transmission fluid replaced, the brake fluid, and the spark plugs. But it says at 150, I should inspect the accessory drive belt for fraying. But you think I should just have them replace the accessory drive belt anyway?
I'm after all the years I've been in business, I'm kind of an 8-year, 80,000-mile guy on belts and hoses. It seems to us that, first of all, if you lose a belt on the road or if you lose a hose on the road, almost always there's some extra work we have to do to put you back together. So, you know, you're at the worst case, you overheat and ruin the engine. You know, the 150 is a little far, and he did say 2015. So he's 4 years. Was that right? You said 15?
Correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So he's 4 years old.
Yeah.
So I 4 years and 100,000 miles is a little less than my 8 and 80. But
it sounds like
close
he drives
enough.
Quite a few miles a year. So
yeah. So you could ask him to do that. Mm-hmm. That would give you time to bid the work. Mm-hmm. But you're talking about all the hoses and all the belts. Now, here's my key, my offerings to you. Here's my suggestion. You tell him you want your belts and hoses back. You wrap them up in some big plastic bag and stick them in the corner of your trunk. If you get stuck in Wilcox, Arizona on a Sunday because your belt breaks or you need a hose, there's a good chance he's not going to have your hose, but he can install your old one. So keep the old belts and hoses in the trunk. That's your kind of call. You could ask them for their opinion. But I'm really impressed about this. Bob says my owner's manual says
yeah,
that 100,000
miles.
No one ever does that. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever does that. They don't come in. They don't even know what their owner's manual says. But there's a lot of, not a lot, there are some shops out there that are selling these two fluid changes, transmission and brake. You need to do that every 30.
Right.
You need to do that at 60. So they're speeding up that process, and that's clearly buttering your own bread and not taking care of your customer. So Bob's going to go in there with his guns. So
he's ready.
He's ready. I'm not going to say.
He's armed with, yes.
Yeah, with
knowledge.
Information.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's really, if he came into our store, we would say to him, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Because our customers don't do that.
Yeah.
They
say, will you check and see what I need to have done at 60,000 miles or whatever.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
So, Bob, you know, that's a flip of a coin, but I agree the transmission and brake fluid is something that you should have done. So, I think it's left up to you. I'm thinking that that's going to be a bill that's going to be probably north of 300 easy.
Yeah.
And now you got coolant too. So you've got a coolant flush. You got a couple gallons of coolant or 1.5 gallons of coolant. You got all the belts. You got all the hoses. You got hose clamps.
Yeah. Well, he was just asking about the belt, not necessarily the hoses, but you think the hoses should.
I think you do them both together.
Okay.
Because there's a benefit there. There's some duplication of labor. So I think you do them together and that's what it is. Anyway, thanks, Bob. That was a great question. Thank you very much. Richard, you're up next. How can we help you?
The table. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Oh, this is Richard. Hey.
Yes, sir.
I was talking to somebody else. Hey, I have a 2006 Chevy Silverado with a 6-liter engine, and I'm having a couple bolts have already broken off, three of them actually, on the exhaust manifold.
Mm-hmm.
And who can fix those? And do you know?
Well, it's not really who can fix those. It's who's done it many times before.
Yes, that's what I mean. Yeah, exactly.
Gosh, what part of town do you live in?
I live in East Mesa.
Okay. I would stop at Thompson's at Main Street in Stapley. Yeah. I mean, he's been around a long time. He's been around a very long time. You have to go in there. Pretend you were at my shop. I'd say to you, there's about 75% chance we're going to get all three of those out. There's also a 25% chance that we're going to break our easy out in one of those studs, and that's going to create a problem. Now, we could put bolts around it, but we're still going to have an exhaust leak. So the problem is you have an 06, so you're, what, 13 years old. Mm-hmm. Those bolts have been heated up and cooled down a million times. But I would say that you have 75 to 80% chance that somebody's going to get all three of those out. Now, let me ask you, do you have a ticking noise?
Oh, yeah. It's really bad now because two of them are broken right next to you. It's the back one on the driver's side and the one right next to it. So you hear explosions, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Clicking really loud until it warms up and then it disappears.
Okay. Now,
basically.
Now we're talking about access, too. You can see those two broken bolts at the back of the motor, but you got to get a drill and stuff in there.
Right.
So worst case scenario is, you pull the head. Mm-hmm. You know, you pull the intake, you pull the head, you send it to the machine shop. They're going to chuck it up in a piece of equipment, a big vise, and they're going to drill them straight. And they got bits to take our easy outs out, and we're going to use heat, and we're going to soak them in penetrating oil and all that other kind of stuff. So that's worst case scenario. So those are your choices. I want to tell you,
though. Can Thompson's do that, though?
Yeah, I'm quite sure that they would take that. I'm quite sure they would take that. The other issue is really and truly, how often do we see this happen? 3, 4, 5 times a year? We're not taking broken studs out. Whatever you've done wrong, you need to stop doing that. Because you're being punished for these three broken bolts.
Did you do it, or did somebody
else? I was living with the two broken ones, and then the third one broke the other day. And it's not so bad until you get, you know, it's pretty noisy the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, and it's
and
nothing
it
that you
away.
Had. You didn't have anything to do with this. You weren't putting an air ratchet on any of these. They just broke on their own.
You know, yeah, exactly. Well, the first time it was making that clicking noise, and the first two broke. I thought, well, maybe it's a lifter noise or something. I didn't know. And then it went away when it got warmed. And then I thought somebody said it could be that. And I looked, and sure enough.
All right. Well, the only possibility, I'm up against a time break here, but the only possibility, the only other possibility is your wife took your truck and was out drag racing it. She got them really hot and broke those bolts like a guitar string.
We don't do that.
So you know what? I did tow a trailer once.
Oh.
And I started making the noise. You know, kind of thing. If that's what I told that trailer.
Wait a minute.
You told that trailer.
Go with me on this, okay?
I'm trying to
get you. Your wife was towing the trailer. You hit your head day before yesterday, and you don't really remember historically. Anyway, thank you very much, and tell your wife thank you for laughing in the background.
And then, Main Street, or where are they?
Main Street, east of Stapley.
In Stapley.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right, you betcha. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's five. We'll see you then. Well, 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. Strictly Diesel is up near Pinnacle Peak and the I-17, been around a very long time. Nate owns and operates Strictly Diesel. He handles light diesel trucks, domestic and foreign. Now, that's light. That's not the big trucks, but that's light trucks. He also does all kinds of parts. So if you're looking for parts and and you want to have a discussion about a part to enhance your diesel or to replace the air filter and put a cold air kit on or whatever you decide, Nate's a good source of that kind of discussion. You can do that on the web as well. So if you've got a diesel and you're looking for one of the best shops in town, if not the best diesel shop in town, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair up south of I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. You had something. What you said.
Well, I was just going to say, Bob, you know, when we were talking about his belt and his hoses and he had 100,000 miles, and this is always a good time to do that stuff anyway because we're coming into the hot months and get it done and get your cooling system ready for the summer. So,
And you're right. I missed that part. Here's what I would have said to him if I had remembered. Mm. If you don't do it now, you do it before next summer.
for sure.
We're going to kick it off a year.
Right.
So if you don't do it now, then do it before next summer.
Yeah, but he said he drove like 25,000 miles a year. That's a lot, because normally, isn't it, about 12?
Yeah, so 10 to 15.
Yeah.
Okay, well, good. Thanks for bringing that up. Let's go to the phones, and we've got Dick. And by the way, hang on, Dick, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And if you got a call, we've got four lines available, but we're going to talk to Dick. Dick, how can we help you?
Well, first of all, I want to tell you that you've got one of the greatest voices in radio. Even though somebody didn't care about cars, I think they'd love listening to your show.
I'm pretty passionate.
You and Sebastian Gorka. This may be out of your bailiwick, but you said your lines were open, so I figured it was worth a shot. I have acquired 7 Cushman Eagle Husky engines and about 8 of their transmissions. These are from the mid-50s. And I wondered if you had any place you could recommend that works on small engines.
I do.
Who?
Well, I've made progress already.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I'm not going to be able to tell you that information right now, but I'm going to... I'm talking to my wife.
Okay.
The machine shop that I bought that Suburban from, that old Suburban.
Yeah.
Their father was a Cushman extraordinaire, and he died, and the two boys are now running the machine shop.
Okay.
I don't know, but last time I was there, I swear I saw a Cushman.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, they would really be interested. It's more likely than not that they would be interested in what he has.
Okay.
Or they would know some other Cushman aficionados.
Right.
Cushman was a motorcycle that had floorboards. So you sat in the seat and you put your feet on the floorboards. It had a small tire on the front, a small tire on the back. And they probably, some of them had a shifter next to the gas tank. You went around. A two-speed. A forward. It was a one and then a neutral and then a two, if I'm not mistaken.
You got it.
And there was a kid way back when I was 13 years old up in Denver, Colorado, that had a Cushman, and we all loved to ride that thing.
Yeah.
So you're going to call my son Alan, okay?
Okay.
And it's, have you got a pencil handy?
No, I'm actually walking.
Okay.
Or just email you.
Well, yeah, you can email me, mark@marksalem.com. I'm going to forward it to my son, Alan, because he has the business card of that machine shop.
Okay.
And, well, that would be wonderful.
And I think I can pull that off. I can put you in touch with people that know Cushman's inside and out, and I know that the father at one or twice had taken one and completely renovated it. Between the time I saw that, it wasn't for sale. Then when Dad died, I think there may have been some sales associated with that. So, alrighty. Well, Dick, thank you for calling. And if I hit a home run on this, call me back and let me know, because my wife doesn't believe I ever do anything right. She complains constantly. But anyway, let me know. 602-508-0960. You want to say anything in defense of yourself?
Nope. They all know you're a good storyteller.
All right, and I am a good storyteller, but there's a lot of truth in what I say. I'm going to tell them a story right now, real quick. A guy brings a VW bug in to our shop. Now, I'm not thumping our chest. They need to know there's a lesson behind this. He brings a VW bug, a beautiful BMW, and this had sentimental value, clearly. And he asked us to just go over it. Shortly after he got it home, it caught fire.
The next day, I think, or two
the
days.
The next day.
Yeah.
So we bring it back in, but I'm thinking, all we did is an oil change and air up the tires and stuff. Why is this it? So we bring the car into the shop, and we bring everybody over. Now, I'm an expert in this kind of stuff, but I'm not an expert in fire science. And fire science is cause and origin. So the fire science guys go, well, the origin is here. Now we have to figure the cause. You look at this, and you can clearly tell it's the carburetor.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, we haven't done any carburetor, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, what do you guys think? And Ron, who worked on it, said, I did. I said, it's not on the bill. He said, well, I saw a little fuel leak from that hose right there that feeds the carburetor, and I just tightened up the clamp.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the fuel hose is gone, and it's clear that when he tightened the clamp, he aggravated. And the hose on there had to have been since Fred Flintstone.
Probably since it was new in 69 or 66 or whatever year it was. Yeah.
So I said to Ron, for $2 worth of hose and $2 worth of clamp, why didn't you just replace the hose?
Mm-hmm.
Why did you just tighten? And the hose had to be like original. It's a rubber hose with this cloth around it. And that's original stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, We put a complete wiring harness in that. We replaced a whole bunch of stuff underneath the hood. We, through the grace of God, we didn't have to paint the hood. But we put that VW back better than it ever was. Mm-hmm. We didn't charge him anything. But it, had it not been for Ron raising his hand and said, no, I tightened the fuel clamp, mm-hmm. my conclusion would have been we didn't touch the fuel system at all.
Right.
And we didn't charge him for any fuel system stuff at all. Right. So when you look at the big picture... But
so the moral of your story was...
Is Ron told the truth.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true. And you never know when somebody says, hey, this happened right after I got an oil change, that maybe it was our fault. And...
Well, I can give you 100 other reasons.
Okay.
We just rotated your tires, and you didn't make it two blocks before a tire fell off. That's mine.
Well, of course. Yeah, that's pretty obvious.
The lady who left, and she made it half a mile away, and her motor smoked yep. because we put the wrong oil filter on it, that's mine. So those kinds of things happen all the time.
Easier.
And they're much easier because, you know, whatever it is. If we put a fan belt on and we didn't plumb it right, mm-hmm. put it on the right pulleys, and we had it off a notch and it wore a hole through the lower hose, that's ours.
Yeah.
And everybody else, 95% of the shops in town, they know.
Right.
They know if it's theirs or not.
But like you said, I think what we started out as, you don't know what it is until we figure out what the problem is. Or you don't know who's responsible until you find out what the problem was.
That's right. So. You don't know whose fault it is until you know what it is.
Yeah.
Okay, this it was a fire.
Yeah, exactly.
But Ron still works for us.
Yeah.
He's been with us for how many years?
I don't know. He was with us for a while, and then he went away for 10 years, and then he came back, and he's been here a couple of years now again.
But his first trip with us was 6, 7, 8 years.
Yeah.
So we've almost had him for 20 years. Mm-hmm. Okay, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have any car questions that Renee can answer, give us a call. Forty-four minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, we're going to go all the way till noon, 12 a.m., or, yeah, 12 o'clock. So anyway, give us a call if you want, 602-508-0960, real quick, and then I'm going to get to the calls. Action Auto Repairs at I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. Tom owns it, and I've known him since 1983, which is about the year he started with his business. He's a great guy. He has ASE Master Certified Technicians, and that's a big deal because that's like having a master's degree in auto repair. So at the same time, he knows right from wrong. So if you're anywhere near the area of I-17 in Deer Valley and you don't have a repair shop, call him up and get an oil change and see how they treat you. See how you blend together. And I'm quite sure you'll be happy with their honesty and their integrity and the quality of their work. All right, Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley. Barb, you're up first. How can I help you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Well, good, thanks. So, you know, I just heard this morning that my granddaughter was having a problem with her car, and I'm driving, and I put the radio on, and I hear you.
Okay.
So I think, wow, this is perfect. And I've heard you before, so I know that you're very knowledgeable. She has a 2006 Suzuki. They don't make them anymore, and it's, I think the Grand Atari, Grand something is the model. I'm not sure if I'm saying it right.
That's it.
Yeah, is that it, Grand Atari?
Yep.
Well, anyway, she, you know, we had it checked out. We bought it from a friend of ours. We didn't pay a lot of money for it, but it was clean, and you know, and yeah, we brought it to a place, and a couple of lights went on. The engine light went on, and but we replaced everything that we thought was necessary, and the engine light goes on and off, but the car was working fine. So now all of a sudden, she says that. And it's been laying a little bit. She doesn't drive a lot at all. So she says now when she puts it in reverse, it stalls. So my daughter found out that when you have 60,000 miles, you should pour, I guess it's called an injector. Would that be correct?
Probably some kind of an injector cleaner?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So she said that after you do that, you're supposed to really drive it around. Which now she's afraid to drive it because she's afraid it's going to stall out somewhere.
Okay.
So I wanted to ask you, who would be somebody that we could trust that could look at the car and you know, be somewhat reasonable that, you know, we could trust that could, you know, look over the car and make sure that it's in good running condition.
Okay, that's a bad idea. You can't take the car and expect the shop to be able to look into the future. So that if I could check it out and give it a general check over and let us know what needs to be now, next month and next year. First of all, I'm kind of troubled about that you had a check engine light and you went and replaced a whole bunch of sensors. That was all money wasted. Then you talked about you had the check engine light come on afterwards, which means you never fixed the check engine light. And I suspect you went to the three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store. He pulled out a variety of codes. He said, this code's an oxygen sensor, you need that. This code's a temp sensor and you need that. And nothing could be further from the truth. So the code tells you the problem's in Ohio. It doesn't tell you where the city and the street and the name of the street. Those are all important kind of things. So as far as the – and let me tell you about the Grand Vitara. Do you know who owned a Grand Vitara and loved it?
No.
Me. It was an all-wheel drive vehicle. It was an all-wheel drive vehicle, and we towed it behind our motorhome, and it was a wonderful vehicle. But you're right. They don't make them anymore. What part of town do you live in?
She lives in Avondale.
Okay. I'd probably go over to S&S Tire because they do more than tires, and I'd probably go talk to them and say to them, is this check engine light and general check over well within the area that you're comfortable with? And if not, who would you take your wife's car to? Okay?
Okay.
That's how you word it. And if your daughter was needing a car and it wasn't a car that you were really good in, where would you send your daughter? So that's what I do. Now, the general checkover is usually done when we do an oil change. So we usually look at the tires, the belts, the brakes, the hoses, the fluids, all that kind of stuff. But let's fix the real problem first. Let's go after this drivability problem and this code. Let's figure it before we do anything else. That's what I would do. Okay?
Okay. So let's start with S&S Tires. Do you know where they are exactly?
No, they're just south, S&S Tire. They're just south of I-10 on Dysart.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Susan, you're up. Oh, wait, that was Susan. We're going to go. No, that was Barbara.
Yeah.
That was Barb. This is Susan. Go right ahead, ma'am.
Yes. Hi. Hi. I've been listening to your show for a while. I find it very helpful to me. I'm a single woman. And a couple weeks ago, you kind of did a long thing on synthetic oil versus regular oil, I guess. And my husband had always told me, we've always used synthetic oil.
Okay.
So I took my car in. I have a 2010 Honda Pilot.
Okay.
And I took it in for an oil change because the little light comes on.
Okay.
And got it changed and got synthetic oil. It said it was 5W-20.
Good.
Engine oil, okay.
I agree.
It was their best. It says best, 5W-20.
Okay.
Anyway, but now it's been, so, and that was at 108,000 miles. So now at 130, at exactly 5,000 miles, which the little sticker says that's when my next service should be, and it should have been on May 3rd of 2019. So I haven't taken it in yet. I'm now at 114,000. But does that just automatically get set for 5,000, or do I really need an oil change? Or
okay. Well, the synthetic oil is capable of 10,000 miles easy.
That's what I remember you saying.
Okay. Now, we got 2010 technology in your car, and the computer is programmed to just turn on between 3,000 and 5,000 miles.
Okay.
I want you to ignore the light. I want you to learn how to just turn the light off. Okay? It will be something in your owner's manual that says you turn the key on, you honk the horn twice, you wave a dead chicken around your head three times, and turn the radio on and off. Really and truly, it's a silly thing, but you can find it. I want you to tell them from now on that you want them to add 10,000 miles to the existing mileage, so the sticker, you don't care about the date on it.
Right.
Just, I want the miles.
The miles.
So I want you to say I'm due 10,000 miles from my 108, so I want you to have that sticker say 118. Now, okay. That little sticker is Mylar in your upper corner of your windshield, right?
Right, right.
So you just peel it off there and put your own mileage.
Sure. Yeah.
But just write your own mileage over the top of it. Just put down you're at 108, so 118K, put that on it, put it with a black magic marker and put it up in your windshield.
Okay.
All right, and then just turn off the light. There's be a procedure inside your car. Forget the dead chicken. I'm teasing you. You know that.
Okay, but but I'm sure it's more complicated than it needs to be. But okay, I just wanted to make sure that I had remembered, because I didn't write it down, but I had remembered that you had said about 10,000 miles. So,
yeah, 10 to 15, and you're not the 15. I'm going to treat you like I would one of my customers or my mother. I want you at 10. I don't want you to drag it out to 15. I want you at 10 because your car's 9 years old.
Yeah.
It's backward compatible. There's no problem. It's just that your car was not designed even with synthetic to go 15. So I'm drawing the line at 10 for you. Okay?
Okay. Great. Right, thank you very much.
All righty. Sitting here next to me is Flying Wingman is Alan. And there's going to be a guy, Alan is my son. He owns the performance side of our company. He does diesels himself and does all kinds of fancy stuff. But there's going to be a guy that has a bunch of Cushman parts.
Okay.
You're going to give him the name on the business card of who I bought the Suburban from. Because those guys have a huge Cushman background.
Okay. Okay.
You remember?
Yeah.
Okay. And his name is going to be, hold on just a minute here, Cushman. His name's going to be Dick.
Okay.
And you're going to guide him to that machine shop. Their father was into restoring old stuff, and Cushman was one of the things. So
okay.
You're going to do that.
Right.
We're going to take Dennis, and I have something else to talk to you about. Dennis, you're up. What can I do for you?
Mark, good morning.
Good morning.
Mark, I have a 2005 Chevy Tahoe with the illustrious 5.3, the LS.
Okay.
And what I'm finding, those particular engines have a tendency for lifters to start going bad and start clicking. I decided do it myself. So I dug into it, and lo and behold, you've got to pull the heads off and replace the
yes.
lifters. We're both shaking our heads.
Yeah, it's crazy. I prefer back in the 60s and 70s when you could do it a lot easier. But anyway, I got the heads off, and I said, well, what the heck? I had a shop that I've had some other engine work done up in North Central Phoenix. And I took the heads up because they kind of specialize in that particular engine to begin with. Got it back together, and prior to doing this, and all I was doing was replacing the lifters on it, prior to doing this, I had no oil issues whatsoever. And had the heads done, and the car sets, the vehicle sets for, say, 2 nights. Come out, and start it up, got a puff of white smoke.
Okay.
Blue white smoke. Something tells me it's a valve seal.
Okay. Well, let's back this train up. The lifters, they're roller lifters, right, Alan?
Yeah. First, we have to determine one thing very first. Do you have DOD in this vehicle? Or the active fuel management?
No.
You do not have active fuel management?
No. Sure.
Okay. All right.
But we've got camshaft problems and lifters problems.
Yes.
And the camshaft problem and lifter problems, the lifters start the process and they take the camshaft down, or is it the other way around?
It's a combination of both.
Okay. So we got roller lifters, as you well know, that ride on the camshaft lobes. What we end up doing is the car comes in, and it's got the lobes are wiped out, and so are the lifters. Then you have to pull the whole front of the car, the engine apart, because the camshaft has to come out the front. And so you went in there. If you'd have called me first, I would have said, don't do anything, because you don't have any symptoms. So I would have said to you not. To answer your question, this oil consumption problem belongs to somebody else. Okay? That's all there is to it. And we don't have a wear-in procedure on valve guide seals or valve guides. So the guides are supposed to drip oil down in the guide to keep the valve lubricated. The seal's supposed to help control that oil. But if you got a blue smoke that you didn't have before, now, where's it at? You got to drive it for 1,000 miles, then you got to pull all the spark plugs out, and you're going to find out which one it looks different than the rest. That's the area of concern. But this belongs to somebody else.
Yeah, no, it's a great shop, great people. I've dealt with this one. I was just thinking possibly, one of the seals or
kind of faulty.
Well, that's easy for everybody to say, but the repair is going to be pretty difficult. That head's probably going to have to come back off. And if you got a valve guide seal, then yes, we have the equipment to air up the cylinder, unload the valve, take the spring off, put a new guide seal back on it, put it all back together. They can do that. You can't. And if you drop that valve down into that cylinder and you decide that you're a stud and you're going to do that, you're going to be in big trouble. So let them do it. So that's what you got to do is you got to take it back to them and say, I got a puff of blue smoke. I didn't have that before. I've taken the plugs out. Number six seems to have a real dark consistency to it. That looks like that's the one. Is this something you want to look at? And there's no reason for them to say, no, we don't want to look at it because this is only going to be a ring issue, and a ring issue would be all the time. Or this is going to be a valve guide, and you get the puff of blue smoke in the morning. So those are the only two possibilities, and it's going to be a valve guide. Anyway, got to run, but thank you very much. That's a good discussion, and that's a good technical discussion when we start talking about that kind of a – that's a 6-liter, right?
No, 5.3.
5.3.
But okay. 6-liters have the same problem.
And, yeah, that's what I was getting there, but you embarrassed me by correcting me in front of all my friends.
Sort of the 4.8s.
Yeah. So the 4.8, the 5.3, and the 6-liters all have
–
6.2 all have the camshaft roller problem. Yeah. What's the estimate real quick on the repair of that? Between what and what?
$2,000 to $4,000
okay.
Usually.
All right, $2,000 to $4,000. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We've got lines open. There's five of them. So you're more than welcome to join us. And if you'll just give us the year, make, and model and the symptoms, we'd be really happy. And then that way we can work with you. 602-508-0960.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is my son, Alan, who's been in this business for a very long time. He handles the performance side of our business. I handle the maintenance side. My wife and myself and my daughter, we handle the maintenance side. He handles the performance, the diesel, the quads, the Can-Ams, the tires and the wheels and
performance, all that stuff.
All that stuff. So we can hit both ways if you want to give us a call, 602-508-0960. Let me tell you real quick about Auto Dynamics. Automotive Dynamics is on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue in the Sun City area. They've been around a long time. Chuck owned it and opened it in 1982. His son Derek now operates it. And Derek, like the second generation of most of us old guys, is a little better than Chuck is, and just like Alan's a little better than I am. So if you live in the Sun City area and if you want to deal with the largest and most trusted source for complete automotive services, plus a family owned and operated since 1982, go see Derek at Auto Dynamics, north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Mike, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning, Mark. Love your show.
Thank you very much.
Hey, I got my wife's Jeep. It's an 02 Jeep Liberty, and she's been having problems with it starting. Sometimes it starts, sometimes it doesn't. After three or four clicks of the key, all we hear is a big click. You know, you told me before, I've listened, and you turn the headlights on, the lights are bright, everything's fine, the battery's been checked. But it's just very intermittent. Sometimes she has to wait 5-10 minutes before it starts.
So we need to get our words right. Does it crank and not catch, or it doesn't crank?
No crank at all, just a click.
Okay.
No cranking.
Well, if I had to guess, I'd guess a starter solenoid package would probably fix this. I think you should spend the $50 or less to have somebody diagnose it. So really and truly, we're going to go to the starter, and we're going to make sure that the trigger is coming from the key. So when you get the key, there should be a click. And in your case, if there's an audible click, that means the trigger from the key through the neutral safety switch is trying to activate the starter. Oh, do you know where the starter's at on this Liberty?
Okay. Yeah. My son looked at it.
Okay. You can follow the positive battery cable to the starter. But here's what I'm thinking. If your wife loves you, you make sure the parking brake is on and that she loves you and she's not mad at you. So you're going to crawl underneath the car with a hammer. And she and you know it's coming, so she hits the key and it clicks. Now you tell her, hit the key to the start position and let it click and then count to 10. And you whack that starter with the hammer. And if it starts and runs, Mark just saved you $50 because you need to replace the starter and the solenoid. If you hammer that thing, the brushes aren't touching the armature. So when you hammer it, the vibration lets the brushes touch, and the brushes are worn out. And that's the reason why they're short and blah, blah, blah. So that's the key. That's what us old gray-haired guys know that nobody else knows.
I like that. Yeah, I like that. I'll try that out. Yep.
All right.
Good one. Thanks, Mark.
You betcha. Right. Thank you very much. All righty, Joe, you're up next.
Hey, hi, Mark. How you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Good. Listen, I'm sitting in my garage at the workbench. I haven't driven my 2000 Ford E150 van since Thursday. And I'm just sitting here, and I hear this noise, and I think, man, the neighbor's got a problem. Well, it's coming from my van, okay?
Okay.
And like I said, it hasn't run for a day and a half. So anyway, so I went in, and I, you know, jocked the key back and forth, and nothing happened. I kind of tap. Oh, it sounded like it was coming from above the doghouse by the radio, but it wasn't the radio.
Okay.
And so I turned the car on. I thought I was just going to leave it on for a second because I'm in the garage, and turned it off, and the noise stopped. Have you ever heard? I'm 74. I've never heard of such a thing in my life. Have you ever heard of something like that?
Well, yeah, but I mean, you should have left it alone. You should have crawled underneath the dash, or you should have started touching things all over underneath the dash to give us some kind of a clue. So
okay, now see that explains probably if it's under the dash. And see, I don't get under dashes anymore. I used to do that.
I understand.
I just am too old and too arthritic. But anyway, I just had a smart start box put on underneath my dash. I just had it done like Tuesday or Wednesday. So I'll bet there's a connection. Could that possibly be something like that under there?
What is a smart start?
Oh, it's a deal that, okay, I had a remote start, and it's by Viper. It's called a smart start. But then they have another feature where you can start your car on your phone, and you can monitor whether it's running or not and the temperature in the van, because I have a dog with me usually.
All right, let us talk about this out loud. There's not going to be any remote, any fob, anything that's going to do anything other than activate the ignition system, which is fuel and spark, and hit the starter. It's not going to turn on the blend door. It's not going to turn on the fan underneath the dash. It's not going to do any of that stuff. Where would that noise be coming from? It's either under the doghouse or above the doghouse. So it's either underneath the dash or underneath the doghouse. What else would happen when you go to remotely start the car?
I don't know the answer to that, but if he just had it installed Tuesday and this is the first time he's ever heard it, my gamble is it's going to be related to that. What it's doing, I have no idea.
Yeah, but that's a good question for them is what's different when I go to this new start device? What's different? Now, he's not going to hear the fuel pump because the fuel pump's in the trunk.
I mean, maybe you got so close to it with your phone and it recognized something on your phone. I don't know. I can't explain that. We don't install those, so I don't know.
The whole idea is that in order to start that vehicle, we have to light the ignition system, light the fuel pump, and then the starter's going to crank.
Yeah.
So if we have all three of those, but if he lights the fuel pump, he's not going to hear that. And if he lights the ignition.
I didn't try to give you the idea that it started the fuel pump or even was in any kind of a start mode at all. It was just a vibration. It sounded like by the radio or the doghouse, which is just above the radio.
Yeah, I know, but we're talking about what does it need to start the car. We're talking about those systems. These are things that have to happen before the starter cranks. So we got to light the ignition, we got to light the fuel system, and then the starter is activated, and then it already has spark and fuel, and boom, it starts. But I really don't. If these guys are really good at what they do, they've heard this symptom before. So it shouldn't be a problem. But I think in a nice way, you just say, you gave me something I didn't have before. Can I explain it to you? And maybe you look to see what's going on. That's how I would handle it. So.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you. You're welcome, Joe. You're welcome. E150 van.
Yeah.
We haven't heard that in a whole long time, have we?
No.
But they're pretty good. Ken. I think Ken's next. Is Ken around?
She is.
All righty. How can I help you?
Well, I've got a 2013 Prius V, and just recently I had the ABS pump replaced because I was getting a clicking sound and it was annoying me, and the diagnosis was the aviation pump. So it got fixed. But what's happened since is my idiot lights appear on my dash, everything to do with brake, ABS, et cetera. And I don't know what needs to be done to get those lights out of there. I've been told that when you replace an ABS pump, there are two components to it. One is a module, and I forget what the other one is. And they have to be a matched pair, or they're not going to be in sync, and it's never going to work.
Who did this repair?
Don't give his name. Don't.
No. I'm saying, did you do it, or did a shop do it?
A shop did it.
Well, yeah. I'd be. This is a no-brainer for me. I'd turn right back around and take it there and say, hey, all these brake lights are on. We need to get this handled.
And there is a module. The module's the brain, and then the ABS. You're calling it a pump, but in reality, it cycles all the systems. So it's really a control module. There's an electronic part, and then there's a mechanical part. And so now that you've got stuff you didn't have before, I think you'll agree that they gave you a problem. Now, this could be as simple as rebleeding the system.
Mm-hmm.
This could be that simple. We got a little air in the system. We didn't get all the air out. Air rises to the top, and obviously sometimes you got to let the car sit for a day or so to get all the air out of it. Now, they have to also have a scanner to be able to control the module and make it open, make it closed. So it's more than likely that there's going to be some kind of sophisticated electronic device that's going to be necessary to completely bleed your brake system with the ABS controller. So this is really
that makes a lot of sense, because what I was told, one of the problems could be that when the pump, call it what you want to call it, but when that was replaced, they never completely bleeded. Brake line, and so that could cause it, but I like what your solution is. I have a problem now I didn't have before. Go fix it. I paid your money. Go fix it.
Okay, but I just want to soften that.
Yeah. I was just going to say, be a little
more diplomatic. It's kind of like
I am a diplomat.
Okay. All right. And I'm just going to go over for the rest of people.
Yeah.
This is what I want, Mark. I really like your shop. I've been a customer of yours for a long time. It appears that you gave me something that I didn't have before. Let me explain it. And can I leave my car here? And by the way, if you're going to spend any of my money, I want you to call me first, okay? Thank you, Mark, and take off. Because you're letting him know I'm not participating in this repair. Number two, you're blowing a little smoke up his skirt on the front side saying, I really like your shop. And he's going to work extra hard for you. And here's the deal. Everybody knows whose fault it is when it's fixed. If he's a stud, he's going to call you up and he's going to say, Ken, we screwed up. We just flat screwed up. We got the wrong module. We didn't get all the air out. He's going to explain it to you. I'm really sorry. And if you're really a good customer, I would think that somebody in our operation would say, for the trouble we gave you, I'm going to put a free coupon for an oil change on the dashboard for you. And that's kind of how it should work under the ideal conditions. So our suggestions is try to blow a little smoke up his skirt, and I think it'll benefit you. I know it does around here. All right. Thanks, Ken. Thank you very much. The lines are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you want to call, the lines are wide open. Gil's going to answer your phone. Gil just recently got out of jail, and he is starting to be
reacclimate himself into the civilization.
You know, it's brighter outside than inside.
And he just said in our ears, it's brighter outside than it is inside. We're teasing Gil, but that's because we can. And you're not allowed to, so don't think you're going to. 602-508-0960. Minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, Mark Salem and Alan Salem here at your service. And a couple of things I got to take care of real quick before we talk to Shannon. Thompson's Auto Repair has been around since 1970. Brian and Thelma both come from car repair backgrounds. And I would dare to guess, and I'm quite sure I'm right, that their families go back to the 50s and the 60s, because I know for sure they were in the 70s. So both of those come from a background with their parents of true honesty and integrity, because I knew both of their parents. So Thompson's is a great place. Brian and Thelma have been around a long time. They're on Stapley, just east of Main Street. They know what they're doing. They're going to give you a fair shake. They're going to raise their hand if they made a mistake, and they're going to raise their hand and saying, I'm not the right guy for that. Shannon, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. Let me just say I'm a first-time caller, and I could not wait till Saturday came because I'm having a bit of a problem with my 2015 Dodge Journey.
Okay.
And I've had it in three different shops trying to diagnose the problem. I've had two different things replaced, still did not fix the problem, and I picked it up Tuesday from the Dodge dealership, drove it for 2 days, and it started doing the same thing. And I'm saying my car is possessed because it only happens when I drive it.
Well, why don't we start with the real quick, give me the symptoms. What is it doing?
What it starts out with is my radio will go blank, and then it fades back on, like it's resetting.
Okay.
It will go to whatever station it wants. Then my speedometer starts going left to right, left to right. And then my digital odometer starts going up and down the digit.
Okay.
Then, you know, your seatbelt, the bell starts going off. And then my swervy brake light goes off.
Okay, okay.
Where the tachometer is.
okay. Now, is this a problem that's present every time you turn the key on, or is this an intermittent problem?
Intermittent.
Okay.
That's why they can't find it.
Right. That's exactly right. None of those that you've mentioned is going to put your life in jeopardy, whether the radio goes on or not.
Did I tell you that it stopped on its own?
Does it do that all the time?
No, it only did it twice.
Okay. That's a problem. That could be a problem. You know, with an intermittent problem, and especially with all the different corners of this square box, you've got radio issues, you've got speedometer issues, you've got seatbelt stuff. There's going to be a problem in a main circuit that feeds all of those things. The question is you're in Phoenix, and there's 20 different highways that leave this valley. Which one do I take first? Now, it's unfortunate for me to say this, but the fact of the matter is you've got limited choices. If this is going to be a bad connection, I'd be willing to bet $100 this is going to be a bad connection, or maybe we need a reflash somewhere where we've lost some memory.
Well, let me ask you real quick, what has been replaced to this point?
Okay, first they replaced a piece that was on the brake. They said that, the battery. So
okay.
They said that we weren't getting a good, you know, charge.
Connect ground, yeah.
That was replaced. Then we just had the navigation and radio replaced. That was pricey.
Oh, yeah.
I thought maybe that would fix it.
Okay.
I drove it for 2 days, and then it
came
started
back.
Doing it again.
It's right. definitely electrical system related.
It is. It's going to be a bad ground. It's going to be a bad power supply. It's going to be a corroded fuse. It's going to be something that's
short
just silly,
somewhere.
silly. Okay, first thing you got to do is call up who did the radio and the navigation. Then it wasn't cheap, and you put them on notice. That did not fix your problem. And it was not represented as a guess. If you would have told me that I was going to spend $800 to $1,500 on a guess, I wouldn't have let you. So I would really like you to talk to the technician, and if they have my old part, I'm happy to bring it back if you want your part back. And then you guys, at your expense, put mine in and take yours out. But you, nice. I want you to do that nice.
I'd be very nice.
Okay. Then the second thing I want you to do is I want you to go see Bob at Harker's. He's going to kill me for this. Go see Bob at Harker's. First of all, he's a diagnostician, the extraordinaire. I think he's better than I've ever been. That's how good he is. And that's assuming that people think I'm pretty good up to that point. If I'm a 9, he's a 12 on a 10 scale. Okay?
Okay.
But I need you to go there. But you got to clean up a mess behind you. You've got some people out there that guessed with your money, and unless they said to you, Shannon, I'm going to replace your entertainment center. I don't know if that's going to work, and I can't return electrical stuff, but you need to okay that, because even though it's a guess you're going to have to pay for. That's not the conversation you had.
No, and it was, I won't mention the name, but it was at a dealership.
Okay, so you're not going to mention the name. So you need to talk to the dealership. Now you can say, you can have another look at this, but I want my old part put back in. You can have another look at this, but I'm not going to pay again for the labor. If you want to look at it again to try to salvage your $1,500. But this teaches you something that I want you to learn. Repeat after me. Mr. Salem.
Mr. Salem.
I understand that you've diagnosed my car.
I understand that you've diagnosed my car.
However, I need you to answer a simple question.
However, I need you to answer a simple question.
Is this a guess or a fix? And if it's a guess, whose money are we guessing with?
I'm writing it down.
Okay. Whose money are we guessing with? That's exactly right. Now, I practice what I preach. I can give you hundreds of people who we have had this conversation with. And there's times we say, one out of 20 times, we say, this is a guess.
No question.
This is a guess.
But I can tell you it ain't a $1,500 guess.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
I promise you that.
You took the words right out of my mouth. Now, if it was that, why don't we just disconnect it? Why don't we pull the fuse on that circuit? Why don't we just disable that and see what kind of an effect it has on the whole system? Shannon, two things. Go back to wherever, and let's clean up that $1,500 mess.
Or whatever it was. She never told us the price, but we're just assuming. But anyways, go ahead.
And then two, then call Bob, and this is how you wave the red flag in front of him. You say, Bob, my name is Shannon, and I've got this electrical problem that's causing all kinds of weird things. It's against my better judgment to do business with somebody that I've never met before. But there's some idiot on the radio that says you're really, really good at, and so what I need to say to you is nobody else in the world can fix this. So do you want to try? That's waving the red cape in front of the bull. He'll bite and you'll be home free. Okay?
Oh goodness. That's amazing.
All right.
And how do I get Mr. Bob's phone number?
Let me see if I can give it. Oh, here it is. Are you ready?
Yes.
602-278-5558. Mm-hmm. And we're in the radio studio, and my wife has this huge map with everybody's position on it. But the problem is I can't really see clear across the room, so I have to walk around the desk to grab it. But 602-278-5558. Ellen's going to answer the phone. That's Bob's wife. And you just say, and you can talk to her. Yeah, you can talk to her because she's been around a long time. So, anyway, I got to take a break.
Well, thank you so much, and I will drive across the valley for the best mechanic and diagnostic in the valley. I'll go anywhere.
Let me know, because if it turns out bad, I want to know, and if it turns out good, I want to know. Okay?
I'll do that. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Shannon. All righty. That's going to say T.O.T. Harkers, and he's going to call me and use bad language, but I don't care. So 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's five of them, so you can grab one. You know what? We've never had really anybody say, is this a guess or a fix? But I think we say it before they do.
Right,
so,
exactly.
602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Alan Salem. He's my son, and together we'll give you the best we can. All about that 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Alan Salem. Folks, we have a best car repair shops list at marksalem.com. These guys are really the cream of the crop, the very best I can offer you. There's lots of times that there'll be a car in a geographical area, and I'll send them to that shop, and they'll pull a rabbit out of their hat. So it's really, really nice for me to be able to recommend them, know that they're really good. Kurt's Auto, he's pulled rabbits out of his hat two or three, four, five times a year. He's proud to be an independent, family-owned and operated auto repair facility. They're just recognized as one of last year's Better Business Bureau Ethic awards winner, and that says all you need to know. Since they opened up their doors in 1987, he's been working on domestic and import, both gas and diesel. And he hates it when I said, but if your lawnmower doesn't start, take it to Kurt's and he'll get it running. So Jeff and Eric and Kurt are all master technicians. They run the shop together, and it's a trio that has 100 years of experience, and those two young guys are as smart as they come. So if you're anywhere near I-17 and Bell, Kurt's Auto, northeast corner. Let's go to the phones. Mary, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. Good morning, Mark. I have another question for you, or puzzle. I have a 98 Toyota pickup and has 253,000 miles on it. It's still going great. The only problem is when I first started in the morning, if I just back it up or just really quick start it to move it and then shut it off, I have to wait 10, 15 minutes before I can start it again. But if I keep it going, I don't have any problems, and it's always the same, and that's the only time I ever have any problems is first thing in the morning when it's been sitting all night.
Okay. All right. I have some questions to ask you. So you get in it. We're going to call it start number one and start number two. So you get in, and start number one, you hit the key. It goes, and then it goes, okay? So it cranks over, and it starts. Now, we're going to go to start number two. When you hit when you go to start it the second time, does it go or not?
No, it's dead. Nothing.
Good.
Absolutely nothing.
Oh, good, 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 good. See how good we go. Mary and I are. We're just joined at the ears. And she answered all the questions right.
Yeah.
It's not that we're surprised that women answer the question. But see,
it
guys.
It makes it easier on us.
Oh, my goodness. The guys, those big hairy-chested guys come in and they start off with, I've been working on cars all my life. And then the question is, what the hell are you doing here? And they tell us everything imaginable. We'll have 17 minutes on the front counter. And, of course, I'm teasing the guys, but I'm trying to blow a little smoke up Mary's skirt. But at the same time, you and I just covered that in a minute and 31 seconds. So the
believe
issue
it or not,
is,
we see a lot of cars. I mean, we see 40 or 50 a day. So, I mean, most of this stuff, we can cut you off halfway and tell you what, you know. So,
but not only that is the more information you give us, the cheaper the diagnostic is.
Yeah, right.
We know we're after a starter.
Right.
We're after a neutral safety switch or a solenoid or a starter motor.
Brake light switch.
Why brake light switch?
Well, I had one this if it's not activating the
neutral.
Neutral.
You're right about that.
I fixed Jared's this week doing that.
Okay.
He called me, said he couldn't get it into gear. I said, the brake light's on? He said, no. I said, kick that little switch underneath the brake pedal, and he kicked it and it got into gear.
I know, but well,
I said that would be 125.
Yeah. He's a lawyer.
Yeah, no, I know.
Don't forget that. The bottom line is you need to tell the shop exactly what you told me. When it starts perfectly. Start number one, it cranks over, boom, it starts, the engine runs. I park it, and I go back out, I hit the key, there's nothing. There's nothing. So I have to let it sit for a while, and then it starts right up. So I am quite sure you're going to need a starter and a solenoid. I think 80% of the time we're going to do a starter. She's got 253,000 miles on it.
I wonder why that's the only time, though.
Well, the answer to that question will be after you fix it.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, if you and I had that, I know I'd crawl underneath that after the second start, and I hit the starter with a hammer, and if it cranked over, then boom, we're done.
Yeah, no question. I just wonder why that's the only time of the day that happens.
I don't know. But you're falling into the track,
track. That's the only time of the day that it happens, and we've tried hitting it with the starter, and it doesn't help.
Okay. Mm. The answer to that question is not what we want to take off at $125 an hour diagnostic fee. We don't care. That answer will come after we fix it.
Yeah, right.
We'll have the answer after we fix it. So it's not important. Why does it only do it the second time? That's a red herring. That is a place that's a drive path we don't want to go on. We'll fix it first. Do you have a good garage?
No.
What part of town do you live in?
Off of 15th Avenue and Encanto or Thomas.
Okay. There's two shops in your area, 25th Street Auto, 25th and Indian School, and Martin's Auto Repair, which is Indian School and 16th Street. So along Indian School, there's one at 16th Street and there's one at 25th Street. I can tell you unequivocally that either one of this them can diagnose this and give you an estimate, and if you allow them, they can fix it. I can guarantee that. On a 1 to 10 scale, this is a 3, maybe even a 2. Assuming that the guy that's working on it's got a little bit of gray hair in his mustache or in his
head. And plan on leaving it overnight.
Yeah, and that's absolutely right. You got to leave it overnight. So, okay. Martin's Auto Repair, 25th Street Auto, either one of those two guys can take care of it. I promise you.
Can I ask you a question? If it's a starter, why does it only do it first thing in the morning?
And I don't want to answer that question because I can answer it after I fix it. Now, you don't want me to do an autopsy on the starter. You're asking a question that's really interesting to you and Alan, but it's not interesting to me. I don't care. When I fix it and you say, well, why did it only do it on the second time? I'm going to say, I don't care. It's starting every time I'm asking it now. So it's kind of like, why does my hip hurt? And then they put a new hip in. I don't know how, that's a terrible analogy. But the idea is the question, it's not necessary to answer that question to fix the car. So I think at the end of the day we'll know the answer to that, but it's going to be long after the car's fixed. Anyway, thank you, Mary. Thank you, George. We're going to get you next, but I got to take a break. We'll be back in a minute. Minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We go till noon, and we're going to take your call, 602-508-0960, right after I talk about Blackwell Auto at 40th Street and Greenway, just north. Tom Blackwell is a scandalous man. Tom Blackwell is sharper than any pencil you've ever seen. He's also, there, just like Mark Salem, Tom Blackwell has no filter between his ears and his mouth. We are cut from the same cloth. We both know right from wrong, and we're always willing to raise our hand when we did something wrong. So if you're up near 40th and Greenwell and you have any kind of automotive problem, I would suggest that you go see Tom Blackwell. He's a good guy. He's a friend of mine, as in all the shops are, and I think he'll take really good care of you. George, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Hey, guys. I really appreciate listening to you guys on Saturday mornings when I am out driving, and you guys helped me in the past. I actually spoke to Alan, called your shop, and he referred me to a company because I bought a Wrangler, and I just wanted a shop I could go to. And so they gave me they did a diagnostics of, you know, how the systems are going. Uh-huh. And recommended repairs, and they said, "Hey, you got to have your one of your axle seals replaced." And I said, "Okay, let's get that done." And then they discovered it, they said that there's like a bend in the housing, and then after they do the repair, they can't say, "Well, it could fail in a week, it could fail in a year." And sure enough, it's a Jeep, and I took it off road, and it's failed. And so it's not like gushing, but it's dripping a little bit now. So my question is kind of general and maybe specific for this, but nothing wrong with my vehicle. How do you prioritize stuff that needs to get done that is not, you know, life or death kind of thing? Or is this a kind of life?
Okay, let me ask you a couple questions. Sure. What year is this Jeep?
06.
Rubicon or non-Rubicon?
Rubicon.
Oh, it is. So it's got the 44 on the front?
Yes.
Oh, and they say you got a bent axle tube on the 44?
Yeah.
Wow.
And the thing is, it was after, I said, yeah, go ahead and fix the seal. I got a call like an hour later, and they said, ooh, we just discovered that there's a bend in the, and I'm looking at it right here, right, in the front differential, what is it, axle housing bend, and would need to have front differential removed and straightened to properly seal the.
Okay, I have a question for Alan. How can we tell if unless there's physical damage to the front diff housing, how do we know it's not a bent axle?
They bend all the time.
They do?
The housing's bent.
And that's the other thing.
Yeah.
The other thing is there's no visible damage on it.
Yeah, okay.
The housing that was repaired.
All right.
Those housings, we, as a matter of fact, when we build off-road Jeeps, we what's called sleeve them because they're so bad. It's a quarter-inch sleeve that we slide in from each end and then weld them in just for this reason because they bend and they break all the time.
Throw the number out.
Again, I've never repaired one. Typically, when we do it, we'll replace it because by the time it usually gets to me, it's busted in half.
Okay.
It could easily be a couple grand. If we can straighten it and put sleeves in it, then you're half that much, you know, 1500, maybe 2000 bucks. But I've never repaired one, but I don't see why it couldn't be repaired.
Okay, who could check it for straightness and straighten it back out and sleeve it? Who could?
Well, I think it'd have to be removed from the vehicle.
Right. Okay.
So at that point, we would just use, differential shop that, you know, we recommend or something. I don't know. But, yeah, pull it out of the vehicle. But,
how about if he found a used one that isn't bent and then turn around and sleeve
it? Well, like he's, you can. The problem is he says he can't even notice that his is bent. How's he going to notice one in the junkyard's bent?
Okay. Fair enough.
But yes, and I'll tell you something else. There's a lot of people that get rid of these 44s and go to 60s. You know that. I know that. You can get brand new ones, you know, out of Jeeps all day long on Craigslist. That'd probably be your best option. But those 44s, they break.
Okay, and let me go back though. He's got a Weep or a Seep. Okay, so if you owned this Jeep and you had a Weep or a Seep that was probably caused by a bent housing,
I wouldn't be concerned about that. I'd be concerned about all the broken ones I've seen. That okay. Literally break in half.
Okay, so you're not worried about the oil leak. You're worried about the complete differential and breaking off on the pumpkin.
Yeah, they break between the pumpkin and the passenger side shock mount.
Okay.
Literally break in half.
Okay.
And that's ugly.
All right, so, but if he's gonna be a cruiser on Central Avenue and he's not gonna go out four wheeling in Four Peaks, then there's a better chance that he can milk this out for a while.
Well, that's what the last kid told his dad too. Yeah, he was just driving. He said he hit a big pothole and it broke. And,
okay.
Wow, this is weird. This is 3 inches of mud on the bottom of this thing. It must be is that a water main break or something? I don't know.
You mean your customer lied to you?
No, they lied to their dad.
Oh.
Dad told me the truth is he knew it.
Anyway, those are your options. Okay, that's it. All right. I think you've covered it just well. All right, bent differential. Jesus. I don't know if I can have you on this show very often. Ron, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. I have a 2000 Chevy Silverado that I'd like to pull behind my RV. Is that possible?
Automatic or standard?
Automatic, four-wheel drive.
I think that there has to be something. Sometimes they can put a sleeve, four-wheel drive. We're still, no.
Can't you just put the transfer case in neutral?
I don't know that.
What's that?
Do you have a way to put your transfer case in neutral on that vehicle?
I believe so. It's a push button deal, but I think there is a neutral spot.
I don't know what all the rules and stuff are with towing.
All right, I tell you what. His owner's manual is going to say that.
Yeah.
You can get under the towing section of your owner's manual, and it's going to tell you.
Yeah.
But what he's saying is if we put your transfer case in neutral, we're still going to have the front and the rear drive shaft spinning, but we're not going to spin anything else. So we're not going to actually be spinning anything in the transfer case.
Maybe put the tranny in neutral, put the transfer case in neutral, and remove the front drive shaft?
I don't think we have to remove either one, because when you put the transfer case in four-wheel drive, it's
neutral.
Well, here's the deal. In two-wheel drive, it's running just the back drive shaft. In four-wheel drive, it's running both drive shafts. Well, forget four-wheel drive. All we really need to deal with is disconnecting the transfer case from both drive shafts.
Well, I guess the question would be is that if the front tires... Oh, no, the front tires would spin, but they wouldn't be spinning the drive shaft, but the rears would.
No, the front end's going to drive that front drive shaft, but it's in neutral at the transfer case.
I guess lubrication would be the only issue, right?
Well, because both drive shafts are going to be spinning,
right?
But they're going to be bathed by the transfer case oil. I know who Dan Jellin would know this, because he tows his Silverado all over hell and creation.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be in your owner's manual. And if not, I want you to call Automatic Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange. Automatic Transmission Exchange. But I'm going to say that I'm pretty sure if you put the transmission in neutral, we have to have the key on, too, so we don't lock the steering wheel.
Right.
So the key has to be in the on position. And in your case, I would put a knife connection at the negative cable so you don't have to run the battery down. You just put the shifter in neutral. You put the transfer case in neutral. You hook up your tow bar. give your wife a couple beers and take off.
Leave her in the truck.
Oh gosh. I gotta tell you the funniest story. I know I'm gonna get killed for this. We had a 38-foot motorhome, and we were in Miami, Oklahoma, and I was towing a little Suzuki Samurai. And yeah. we were looking at those, what's the name of that, those motorhomes there in Miami?
Prevost?
No. It's the one that NASCAR guys always use.
Yeah, Newell.
So we were just looking at them. So I had to back into this parking lot, so I tell my wife, get into the little Samurai and turn the steering wheel, and we're talking on walkie-talkie. So I back her in, and she's giving me hell. I don't know why she is. So I just take off driving. So she's using bad words on the walkie-talkie, and she's telling me, if you don't stop this thing right now, I'm going to hammer the brakes. And I go, honey, that Samurai ain't going to stop this motorhome that weighs 40,000 pounds. All you're going to do is lock up all four wheels and flatten them. So she's yelling. She is so mad at me because I'm doing about 45, 50 miles an hour heading towards the freeway, and she's her butt's in the little Suzuki Samurai. It took me quite a while to get her to calm down, but don't you try that at home. Anyway, all right, you call Ron about that. But more than anything else, if your owner's manual says that you can tow this and they call it four
Ron,
down.
Phil,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
It's called four down.
I looked in the manual.
Okay.
And it's not in there. It talks about two wheels up, either the front or the back.
Okay. All right. You know, if that's the case, then you can still drive that thing around with just one drive shaft in it.
Yeah.
So if
yeah.
you took the front one off, then the question is can I tow it now in neutral? Park shifter in neutral and transfer case in neutral. But once you put it in four-wheel drive, you're going to have both front and rear drive shafts going to be driven by the transfer case. And so Phil will be able to help you. All righty?
Okay. All right. Thanks.
You betcha. We've had more fun today, and I don't. We need to talk about your wife. Is there anything we can talk about yours? Because there's no sense in me going home and being the only one in trouble.
I don't get out of trouble.
Oh.
So that's the difference.
You're always in trouble.
Yes. There is no other. There's trouble, and then there's more trouble.
Okay. All right. I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to go there because I'm afraid of your wife as well. So it's just one of those things. I guess it's just kind of a Salem boy trait. You know what I mean?
I don't know.
It's just, and I think most people that know both of us know that that roads have a curb on the right and on the left, and most people stay right in the middle. You know what I mean? They go through life just in the middle of the roadway.
Yeah.
I have been accused by your mother of bouncing off the curbs every mile. You know,
right.
Just seeing the extreme on the right and the extreme on the left, and what the heck? I don't care. Anyway, my email address is mark@marksalem.com. If you include a phone number, I'll call you. I'd rather call you than type my butt off for an hour.
Hunt and peck.
Yeah, especially if I've got a broken finger. You know, see this finger right here? I cut the heck out of it. And that's hard for me to hunt and peck when I got my index finger in my right hand. It's got a big owie on it.
Yeah.
So anyway, but I'm going to call you from a blocked phone for obvious reasons. So I'll usually use my cell phone. I'll just dial *67. But when you answer the phone, I'm going to say, "This is Mark Salem. Did you send me an email about your Silverado?" So you'll know right then that I'm not a marketer. But if you don't answer, I'll tell you, I'll call you back in a little while or whatever. So mark@marksalem.com. I'll help you with your stuff. I'll help guide you and stuff like that. But I want you to think about this. Always ask for your old parts back. Not because you want them or that you need them, but if you pay for an entertainment center of $1,500 and it doesn't fix your problem, you have the old part in the new box. You can go back and say, put the old part back in.
There was probably a core on that one, to be honest with you, but
that's
yes,
okay.
I get your point.
Somebody's going to have to deal with the core, and it ain't going to be the customer.
Right.
So the idea is ask for your old parts back. We take and we put your old parts back in the car in the original boxes, whether you like it or not. We're giving you your old parts home. There's two reasons. Number one, you get to look at them, and 99% of the time, you can see the defect in them. Number two, it reduces my trash bill by 50%. Those are the two reasons we give everybody. Now, we're not going to give you a greasy, dirty, oil-leaking part. We're not going to give you your oil filter back. But we're going to give you what we call hard parts. You always pay with a credit card, so if the shop gets a little nippy, you can stop payment on the credit card and let them get involved. MasterCharge, Visa, Discovery, they can get involved. and they'll determine whether or not you should be paying this bill or not. So there's a dispute resolution process that typically happens. So, and if you're going to have a ticket that's beyond your threshold or your comfort zone, then go get a second opinion. Give them the same symptoms and don't tell them what the first shop said. You just go in there and it's a brand new tablet. Hi, my name's Mark Salem. I've got this particular problem. And I'd like to know what your diagnostic charge is. And typically, most of us are going to bid it somewhere between $50 and $150, somewhere in there. And you say, okay, you're going to call me if it exceeds $150, right? Yes, we are. Okay, they can't give you an estimate because they don't know what it is. So you say, fine, I'm going to give you the authorization up to $150, but I want you to be fair to me. So if it turns out to be a $65 diag, then hopefully you'll do that. So they call you up, and then you say, is this a guess or a fix? That's a fair question. Are you guessing or are you fixing? Because if you're guessing, I need to know whose money we're guessing with, yours or mine. Because I don't want to guess with my money. But if you want to guess with your money, then knock yourself out. Mark at MarkSalem.com. Wear your seatbelt. Wave if somebody does something nice for you. God bless you, and I'll see you next Saturday.